Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Katrina Trinko of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Someone's got to keep doing their job while all these other people at National Review are gallivanting around the Baltic. I think that's where they're going anyway. Katrina, it's good to have you with us again.
Great to be here. Yeah, I'm sure that Jim may actually be on his third martini by now.
Yeah, they're not virtual martinis when you're on the cruise, that's for sure. On to our first martini now. And Jim and I talked about this a few days ago when the rhetoric was being ratcheted up, but not to the point where it is now. And that's this ongoing fight between New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. It started about the role of the NSA and the government having access to our personal information. We learned about it through the PRISM program and Glenn Greenwald and Edward Snowden and all that. And now suddenly it's about pork. Here's Chris Christie talking about the pork situation between his state and Kentucky, where, of course, Rand Paul represents.
So if Senator Paul wants to start looking at where he's going to cut spending to afford defense, maybe he should start looking at cutting the pork barrel spending that he brings home to Kentucky. At $1.51 for every dollar, and not look at New Jersey, where we get 61 cents for every dollar. So maybe Senator Paul could you know, deal with that when he's trying to deal with the reduction of spending on the federal side. But I doubt he would, because most Washington politicians only care about bringing home the bacon so that they can get reelected.
And the response from Senator Paul on CNN was pretty much what you'd expect.
This is the king of bacon talking about bacon. You know, we have two military bases in Kentucky, and is Governor Christie recommending that we shut down our military bases? He wants to be this great champion of national defense. What does he want to do, shut down military bases in Kentucky? No, what this debate really is about is that in order to have enough money for national defense, which I think is a priority for the government, you have to be willing to cut spending in other places. And Governor Christie and others have been part of this gimme, gimme, gimme. Give me all this money.
So, Katrina, some see this as a healthy debate, even if the rhetoric's a little bit more ratcheted up than they'd like to see it. Others see it as a party that's in dysfunction right now. What's the consensus from the folks you talk to?
Well, I think, you know, we're seeing a preview of 2016. Both Rand and Chris Christie are very clearly thinking very seriously about running in 2016. And, you know, I think if this is a sign of dysfunction, it's one that's going to continue in the next few years. But it's also interesting because Christie has, for the most part, been pretty complacent about his reputation becoming less conservative, you know, from going around with Obama on the Jersey Shore in the aftermath of Sandy, being willing to say things that aren't perhaps as conservative as someone said. You know, he's positioning himself as a little more moderate right now. And, of course, he's facing reelection. You know, Jersey's a Democrat state. It's smart, but it's also interesting that here he's suddenly drawing himself back in the fray and trying to attack one of his potential rivals' conservative credentials.
What do you make of the shift in Tea Party sentiment? I don't know if you saw the survey earlier this week, but apparently right around the time the Tea Party got going, they were about 12 or 13 points more in favor of the government keeping us safe than being worried about privacy. Now, in the wake of the Edward Snowden story, it's exactly the opposite. So is Rand Paul's side of this debate the one with the momentum right now, or is that just a niche of the overall debate within the party about a whole host of issues?
I would say Rand Paul's side right now has the momentum, but I think agreeing with Rand Paul on the NSA recording all the phone calls into what numbers they went to, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to go with Rand Paul as far as he would go on foreign policy or on national security issues. So I think what Christie and others might need to realize is that there are a lot of people who very much are willing to give up some privacy to keep the nation secure, but this may have been a bridge too far.
If you're Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz or maybe even a Scott Walker or Bobby Jindal, are you frustrated that these guys are already taking up the oxygen in this potential race that's 3 years away? Or are you happy that they're the ones slugging it out and you can kind of sit on the sidelines and see how it turns out?
Well, I think, you know, they're all keeping their options open as far as national security goes. I mean, who knows what the top donors and the top activists are going to think in 2016. You know, we are so far off. I doubt they're annoyed about losing the oxygen. You know, if we were 2 years away from Iowa, they might be more, but we're still, you know, 3.5 years out here.
It's going to go faster than we want it to, I'm sure. All right, on to martini number two now, Katrina. And this is a story that you have followed very carefully and written on extremely well for nationalreview.com, and that's the Kentucky Senate race. We knew, obviously, that Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, he's been there for almost 30 years, running for another term. He's going to be probably the nominee, but the things can change between now and then. He's got a very vocal Tea Party type opponent in Matt Bevin, who's from Louisville. He's already started in this race and saying that he's there to take out a leader, and that's never happened in a primary before in American history. And then, of course, assuming McConnell wins the primary, he takes on Allison Grimes. But take us inside this race right now. How much upheaval is there on the Republican side, or is this just a guy in Matt Bevin who's making a lot of noise but doesn't have much of a chance?
I think a lot's going to depend on what happens in the next few months. Bevin right now is not a huge threat to McConnell, but, you know, he's starting out slow. He's, you know, beginning to meet with people. It's really going to depend on whether he can get traction or not. And, you know, he's a wealthy guy, and he said he's willing to put some of his own money, although he won't give a figure, into the race. So he's going to be up on air, which will make the race more high profile. I think what's going to be crucial is whether, in these next few months, can Team McConnell take him out? They've already attacked him for accepting a taxpayer bailout on his Bell factory in Connecticut. They've accused him of being late on taxes, although Bevin disputes that, saying that he wasn't in charge of the company at the time the taxes were late. So I think it really is going to depend. Can Team McConnell stick attacks on Bevin that work and that alienate the Tea Party from him? Or can he survive unscathed and start building momentum in Kentucky?
Is there any sort of reservoir of ill will among Republicans towards Mitch McConnell? I know Democrats certainly do, but is there a hankering for Mitch to get this type of challenge?
I think there's definitely some. You know, McConnell supported Rand Paul's opponent, Trey Grayson, in the 2010 primary, and Rand Paul and others have been adamant that as soon as it came to the general election, McConnell was 100% behind them. But McConnell is seeing, as, you know, somewhat establishment. Being minority leader means that, you know, he's probably not taking the kind of votes at all times that, you know, maybe Tea Party folks would like. So he argues he's the most conservative minority leader the GOP has really ever had. That's a credible case to be made. But I think there's definitely interest in a potential rival.
I believe you reported earlier in the week it's still a 40-point lead at this point, which probably isn't much of a surprise given that most people don't know who the challenger is.
Right. Yeah, it is a 40-point lead. I think, again, if 2 or 3 months from now, it's still a 40-point lead, much different scenario.
Quick breaking news as we close out the second martini here. We've just learned that Tom Cotton, the freshman congressman from Arkansas, will join the Senate race there. It's one of the Republicans' top targets. Democrat Mark Pryor is running for a third term, but it's certainly a toss-up at best, and we certainly have seen how some of those statewide races have gone for Democrats recently in Arkansas. How big of a coup is this for Republicans just to get Cotton in the race?
It's huge. Pryor is widely seen as someone who can be defeated. You know, Republicans haven't had the best recruiting luck this cycle. Iowa, for instance, it doesn't seem like we've had a single strong Republican come up to vie for that open seat. Pryor is seen as vulnerable. Arkansas is a conservative-leaning state. Tom Cotton is widely considered, you know, a rising star, Harvard grad, military veteran, well-spoken. So this is pretty huge.
On to the next martini, and we're back to Anthony Weiner in a way. We're not getting into any more of the horrific details of that story. But one of the fascinating aspects of this, at least according to reports we've seen from New York publications, Katrina, is how frustrated the Clintons are with a couple of things here. And obviously, Huma Abedin, Weiner's wife, has been a long time a close aide for Hillary Clinton. Bill Clinton performed their wedding ceremony, insert joke here. Then you have the Clintons, of course, wanting Weiner to drop out. It seems from the reports that we're reading here, Katrina, that the Clintons think that there's potential spillover effect here. It would seem that most people, even if they pay attention to this race, aren't going to tar Hillary Clinton with Huma Abedin or Anthony Weiner or anything. So why do you think the Clintons are so upset here?
Well, I think they're right to be concerned, actually. I think Huma Abedin, you can't read about her without hearing that she's extremely close to Hillary, a right-hand woman there at all times, surrogate daughter. I mean, we're talking a very close relationship here. And I think, you know, it leads people, you know, it's been a while now since Clinton and Lewinsky, but the Clintons, it seems like, for the most part, have shed the sort of ickiness of that as far as they're able to. But I think now being reassociated with another sex scandal, it makes people wonder, who are Hillary and Bill? Did they change or did our perception of them change? And I think they're right to be concerned.
We'll see if they can force him out. Wiener just put out a video saying that that's not how New Yorkers roll. I'm guessing there's some other ways that New Yorkers don't roll that he's gone in the opposite direction of. But we're running out of weeks here, just a few more weeks till this primary, and he's already sinking like a stone. So do you suspect that if his numbers don't bounce back up in any way, that he'll probably heed the Clinton advice, or is he already in this to the end?
Honestly, I can't see why he would drop out. I mean, you know, he took his second chance and he blew it. I don't really see people being anxious to be like, if you get out now, we'll help you in the future. I think at this point, he might just be going in it for broke. But yeah, it's interesting, and I don't see any way that he could possibly win or make the runoff at this point.
Fascinating to watch on all these different levels. Katrina, great to have you with us today. Thanks for being here.
Great to be on.
Katrina Trinko of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for listening to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, and please join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.